From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. A couple guests for you today. So you'll get a couple interviews that'll last a good bit, a good portion of today's show. We're going to talk with Jeffrey Wright, as we do every single Thursday. He takes on a couple of our hot takes from a past show. He gives a couple of his own, and we talk a good bit of baseball with Jeffrey. We also are going to bring into the show today Brian Matthews of AuburnSports.com. He's a co-worker of one J.G. Tate. And we'll continue our conversation about Casey Mize, Auburn baseball, and the series that begins at 6 o'clock tonight from Swayze Field. About that time, Neil and Jay will be wrapping up a greatest pot in the South at Cathead Distillery in Jackson. So if you're in the city of Jackson, come hang out with him. Basically hang out with Jay, listen to him blabber on, probably drink some Cathead Honeysuckle in the process, and see where your night goes from there, along with a watch party for Ole Miss and Auburn, 6 o'clock, Swayze Field. It will be Davis Daniel and Ryan Rollison on the bump for the two teams, respectively. Oxford Exxon Podcast today.
Yes. Brought
to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, of course. It'd be kind of dumb otherwise to call it the Oxford Exxon. But you get ribs, you get lunch specials, $4.99, and you get daiquiris. As little as $3 for those daiquiris, as large as 44 ounces if you so choose. As I tell you most days, I recommend the margarita or the hurricane, but you have plenty of other flavors as well there at the Oxford Exxon. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
Can a margarita be a daiquiri?
Well, it can be when you're just using flavoring over the top of alcohol.
Well, that's
it can
true.
Be whatever.
It could be a margarita-flavored daiquiri.
That is what it is. It's not actually a margarita. It's a margarita-flavored daiquiri.
Okay. I mean, I'm all for it. I was just curious. Could you have a daiquiri-flavored margarita?
Well, daiquiri is not a flavor.
I understand.
Margarita has a certain flavor to it that you expect for
a margaritas.
Although you can get a strawberry margarita, which is a daiquiri. So I get confused at a lot of the Mexican restaurants when they go, "Will it flavor margarita?" It's like, "Well, hold on."
But it's a margarita if it has tequila and triple sec. It's a daiquiri if it has rum.
Yeah, that is correct. But if you order a margarita, how many times are you looking for a strawberry flavored concoction?
The only strawberry I like is in a Pop-Tart, not iced.
You know those are more fattening than the iced ones, right?
I realize that, but you know how many Pop-Tarts
I eat. I'm just saying. Yeah. I did not believe that to be true, and I tried to die on that hill and was proven wrong and had to shut up for a couple days because I just assumed that the frosting would make it more fattening, but because the excess bread that's having to replace the frosting, the pastry, it actually has more calories than the frosted variety.
There are few things better than a toasted strawberry Pop-Tart with a little butter on it.
Fantastic. Why are you adding butter to your Pop-Tart?
Well, I don't, but I have in the past, and they're damn good.
I'm amazed you were overweight at one point, Neil. I mean, I'm really shocked. Well, see, I take these strawberry Pop-Tarts, and then I cover them in Country Crock, and then I throw them in the toaster for a minute.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good stuff. No, you toast them first, and then you put the Country Crock on, let it melt.
I've got a buddy, I think, put honey on his, too. It was butter and honey.
Really? On a strawberry Pop-Tart?
Or on Pop-Tarts. I don't know what flavor. It might have been some other flavor.
I pretty much can't do Pop-Tarts.
Well, they're desserts. They're not breakfast.
Yeah, that can't be enough.
Because, like, the flavor I like is, like, the hot fudge ones, and it's like, come on. Yeah. Like, I'm eating cake.
Yeah, that's good.
Warm those puppies up. Maybe a s'mores one.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, those are good. Those brown sugar and cinnamon ones, oh, man.
Scoop of vanilla and
call
it dinner.
Crumble them up over ice cream or under ice cream.
I've never crumbled them up. Crumbled them up?
No, but it's crossing my mind as we speak.
When's the last time you had a Pop-Tart? Because I'm not a Pop-Tart fan, frankly. As good as I talk about these, I never crave a Pop-Tart. I don't
It's been a couple years.
Really?
Yeah.
But you were always Pop-Tarts, not Toaster Strudels.
Yeah, I don't really like Toaster Strudel.
Okay. See, I like Toaster Strudels with no icing.
Yeah,
icing's too sweet.
I don't like the icing, yeah.
Just a Toaster Strudel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate them, but I would choose a Pop-Tart.
Your kids don't eat Toaster Strudels?
No.
They eat Pop-Tarts? Are they in the house right now?
Occasionally.
Would I find a box in the kitchen?
Yeah, you probably could find a box, because sometimes they'll go in their lunches as, like, the dessert.
Do they eat, like, Eggos? Like frozen waffles or anything?
Not often.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what they do eat for, like, breakfast.
Well, tell them about Cart 4, and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah, they don't... We're not... We have to, like, force them to eat breakfast. Clark Ford is in Amory, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. You get your quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of your deal, mention that you heard about Clark Ford on any of our podcasts. It's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So a little setup here on the site. You will find a story about Dallas Wolfolk stepping away from the Ole Miss baseball program. I also did a YouTube Live last night that is linked out front on the site at rebelgrove.com, mostly about Wolfolk, but it got into some other baseball topics and whatnot along the way. About half an hour, and for the first 3 minutes, excuse the fact that it was frankly very, very dark on the video. I figured out what happened, but it was almost like I was trying to do this, like, late night, like, one little lamp behind me thing. You couldn't even really see my face, but I fixed it. We have persevered for future episodes on the YouTube, so.
I saw that you were doing that last night. I actually hit it for a minute to see what it looked like.
Did you?
And you looked fine.
Well, but you didn't see the first 3 minutes then. It was very, very dark early.
No, I was, you were well into it by then. You were like 20 minutes in.
Because what happened was Google owns YouTube now, or their partners or whatever. And I think I sent y'all information for this in an email one time, because if you sign into YouTube with our Rebel Grove account, it kicks you out of your email if you have a Gmail account. So I was using, like, the Incognito browser so it wouldn't kick me out of my email. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Well, the Incognito browser is black instead of white, so it doesn't have that light coming from the browser to your camera to brighten up the picture. That black was making the camera much, much darker when it was underneath the or over the browser. So
gotcha.
That was the problem. So I had to open a system preferences box to get white on my screen to make the camera show brighter. Ingenuity, basically MacGyver over here.
It's impressive. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah.
I would have just given up.
Well, I didn't really think of it. I was trying to fix it. So when I went to pull up the camera settings, it just made it brighter. And I went, oh, well, there we go. That's what's going on. But anyway, that's on the site. You get some analysis. I talked some drafts, some other Ole Miss things as well while we're talking, because I was getting a lot of questions. I had a drink in my hand. We were good for about a half hour. I wasn't really in a hurry. So
yeah, when I signed on to it, you were talking about the kid from Florida that we had talked about on
Gunnar
the podcast.
Hoglund. Him. Yeah, he finally walked somebody. I think he's had like 8 3-ball counts this season.
Oof.
Yeah, basically no command, if you will. So look, not getting into Dallas's thing right now. Wishing the best. Some people have asked me, could he come back next season? Well, I mean, if he doesn't get drafted, technically he has eligibility remaining. I mean, I guess. Sure. I don't know, but sure, theoretically, why not? What does it mean for Ole Miss? Well, it loses a body and a key body that was going to be used. So there's more emphasis on Parker Kiraci. There's more emphasis on Will Stokes. Those are two guys that have both been closers at Ole Miss, so that's an obvious answer. Greer Holston's going to get more innings and more valuable innings, and then
well, someone's going to have to step up because they can't ask any more of Kiraci asking.
No,
I mean, he's maxed out.
And then the other thing is they've got to, and this is where they got lucky. I'll be honest. I mentioned this last night on the YouTube Live. There's two things that give you, well, hope is not really the right word. Positivity is not the right word, but keeps it from being catastrophic, if you will.
Okay.
Kiraci's velocity was back up last week, and he looked more like himself. So maybe he's got over that wall that they sometimes get the first year into throwing a lot of innings, and he can finish out the season in a positive manner. And then Houston Ross' hamstring is intact. He's thrown twice since that hamstring injury, and talk about somebody that's needed. Houston's needed big time right now. I think he is potentially the swing reliever as this thing moves forward to keep this season afloat.
Again, whatever innings Will Fulk was going to give,
someone now has to throw them.
And it can't be Parker Krejci.
No.
Because he's maxed out.
He has his own innings.
He has his own innings and then a few.
Somebody else's innings.
Realistically, you can't go to him for these 3- and 4-inning outings all the time and expect it to turn out well.
And you've got to continue to maximize Will Etheridge's first outing of the weekend. He's your best reliever. Use him once as long as humanly possible.
And you're going to have to get good outings from your starters.
Well, that's the biggest key.
Going to have to give you some
depth. The starting pitching has to be better. That's like somebody said last night, oh, what about the bullpen? Well, the bullpen's been put into a lot of disadvantageous situations because of the starting pitching.
When you're going to your bullpen in the fifth inning now, it's a big deal because you just lost one of your arms. If you go to your bullpen in the seventh or eighth inning, it might not be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, yeah, if you go 7 innings all 3 times of the weekend, and I get that's a tall order, but if you did that, you're talking about Krejci for 2 one night, Etheridge for 2 one night, and then figure it out with Holston and Stokes one day, and you're cool. It's all good.
If I have a criticism of Ole Miss's approach to pitching, and this is – let me preface this with I don't watch nearly enough to have this much of – so this is not a hot take.
You are literally putting ice on your take prior to saying
yes. I have observed a tendency when they're ahead in the count to nibble.
They nibble 0-2 with white pitches a lot.
They nibble sometimes at 1-2 with those pitches. I don't think you have that luxury as much now. You need to get some quick innings. You need to get deeper into games. And when you give pitches away,
they add up.
That's cumulative. Kind of like a credit card, right?
One, it just puts more pressure because we've talked about this. You wipe with the 0-2, then the 1-2 just kind of misses. Well, suddenly you're 2-2. And then now it's a little bit of a deal, and you end up walking a guy sometimes. And
But that's two more pitches.
Yeah.
And then if you do two more pitches, and then you get – now you're setting up the 2-2, and the 2-2's not what you wanted it to be, and it's a base hit. Well, now it's 7 or 8 more pitches. Do that 3 innings in a row. Well, that's an inning.
Mm-hmm.
Just go get them. I think you have to be more aggressive at this point with your bullpen. I would like to see them be more aggressive as it is. I don't like that nibbling thing, especially when the scouting report says, hey, 0-2, they're going to nibble. If you know they're going to nibble, you take right there.
Yeah. It's a pretty old, mature team from the standpoint of handling this. So, look, it's not good for anybody, but if there's a team set up to handle it okay, it's probably all right. The team found out at 2 o'clock yesterday in a team meeting. We'll talk to them a little bit tonight after the game, obviously. I mean, it won't be the primary focus, but I'll ask something. Game Ole Miss has to win. We talked about it yesterday.
It's a must-win game.
It is their pressure game, so you put the pressure on Auburn tomorrow.
Yes.
You don't want to give Casey Mize a free shot tomorrow. So
no.
You're in trouble if you do that.
No, you have to win today, and then tomorrow becomes your
– Ryan Rollison against the guy that's been very inconsistent this season.
Got to win that game. And if you win that game, tomorrow's a
– free shot for you.
Free shot. Go see what happens.
Yeah.
You're facing the best pitcher in the country.
Take some free swings and try to hit one out of the ballpark.
Yeah, see what happens. And then if you win today and you lose tomorrow, you go get them on Saturday and you
– You're at home, go win a game 3.
Yeah, you're at home, and when you shake hands in the handshake line, you say, hey, I shook Casey Mize's hand. Look at that. And then you go from there.
I doubt they're in awe of each other.
No, they're not in awe. They know he's good.
Yeah.
They know the score. They know if they lose tonight, there's a different level of pressure on them tomorrow.
Yeah. Mize has thrown 13 innings against Ole Miss in his career and given up one run.
You know,
there was a 6-inning outing and a 7-inning outing, and he's given up one run.
Dude's walked 7 people all year.
So don't take pitches. I mean, that's what I was kind of laughing. Somebody asked Nick Tortez the other day, hey, do you have to be kind of patient? And he's like, no, you got to hit a fastball. I mean, you get patient and you're out because he's not walking.
You're going to get at most one pitch and at bat that you can do something with.
Yeah, you can't chase. You can't help him. But you can't be the, hey, I've got to take a strike and I've got to do this. You can't have that ninth inning mindset of you have to take all these pitches.
You have to go to the plate early in the count looking for a fastball. And when you get the fastball, you've got to try to do something with it. And then at 0-2 or 1-2, you've got to protect. You've got to shorten your swing. That's the same thing with him. That's where you want to foul a few balls off, spit on some balls. If you're going to strike out, make it be an 8-9 pitch strikeout, not a 3 pitch strikeout.
Find a way to put a piece of the bat on that cutter and hit it over by the dugout and see another one.
Make the umpire throw a bunch of balls. Mm-hmm. Run his pitch count up.
And then maybe by the 8th, it's somebody else's ball.
Yeah, that's what you want to do.
I mean, Vanderbilt was getting the crap kicked out of him, so it didn't really matter anyway. But they allowed him to throw a complete game on like 108 pitches last week. And come on.
No, you got to make him work. Yeah, you have no. And his stuff might have been, in fairness to Vanderbilt, there are going to be nights, and it could happen tomorrow night. There's going to be nights when his stuff is just so damn good that there's nothing you can do.
Well, and Brian Matthews talks about it. He leaves some balls up. He did that against Vanderbilt. He left one up, and they hit the ball out of the ballpark, but it was a solo home run in like a 10-0 game. So it was what it was. But
that's why walks kill. If you don't walk people.
They're white. Look, Auburn's white hot right now, but they are kids. It comes in waves.
Sure.
And you win tonight, and let's say you get one or two on Mize early tomorrow. Suddenly Auburn gets a little tight.
Sure.
It's Swayze Field.
Absolutely.
So that's why tonight's important. And we'll see. So, again, tons of Wolfolk analysis, tons of Wolfolk stuff on the site. Check that at rebelgrove.com. As we said, Neil and Jay at Cathead tonight. What time are y'all getting started? 5 o'clock or so?
Yeah, we're going to start around 5 with our greatest pod in the South. And then the game starts at 6, so we'll wrap up by 6, and people can watch the baseball game for as long as they'd like and hang out a little bit. And some point in the evening, I'm going to find a place, because I've gotten into the damn series, I'm going to find a place where I can see Preds and Jets, Game 7.
Net Par podcast with Jeffrey dropped last night. Jonathan Randolph is our guest on that. We talk about newfound fatherhood for him and plenty of other things, so that is up. In the Oxford Exxon feed, again, I'm going to move it to its own. I'm just trying to make sure people see it first. I kind of have a plan there.
There will be a Oxford Crystal Beer Garden later today. Yeah. It's two guests. I talked to Ross Dellinger yesterday. Ross of the Baton Rouge Advocate, now about to start with Sports Illustrated. Talked about his career. And then we talked a lot of college football. So you'll like that. And then I'm talking to Mike Oz of Yahoo. Talking about that, he on his podcast, Chase, yesterday, they talked about the lack of superstars in baseball, which is something you and I've talked about a lot. They basically said there are 5. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, why that is. And I'm not sure there are 5.
Yeah, I would like to hear his definition for me to give him 5. So we'll I'm interested. We'll see what he
How many super, if you just off the top of your head, who's a superstar in baseball today? I'll give you like hot takes, I'll give you one in a minute. I think there are 2.
Bryce Harper and Mike Trout?
Nope. Bryce Harper and Shohei Ohtani. I don't think people would know who Mike Trout was if he were walking through their living room.
But they wouldn't know Shohei Ohtani either from a recognizing him standpoint.
People are flocking to see him, so I don't know. The Angels' attendance on the day he pitches is significantly
How much of that's
different.
International, though?
A lot. But
it's kind of like, I mean, if we do that, we can say every international player is more recognizable than every American player, per se.
You could.
I mean, I get that's hyperbolic, but.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But Daisuke Matsuzaka was never.
You put Shohei Ohtani in Dubuque, Iowa, and he's not recognized throughout that town.
It's probably true. So if that's the case, there's probably one superstar, Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper might be the only truly recognizable player.
Compared to where in the late 90s, I think the majority of Americans would have recognized Bonds, Sosa, McGuire, Maddox, and a bunch of folks.
Oh, yeah. Griffey. For sure.
Those types
of Griffey
dudes.
Was a superstar.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So
Chipper Jones was a superstar.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I'm curious. We always talk. We're gonna go to break in a second. Then bring in some guests. Always talk about golfers, even pro golfers, mentioning they still get nervous on first tee shots.
Sure.
Every day, just forget to the thing and hey, the first Tiger Woods notoriously bad at first tee shots on the first hole. I was thinking about your live show tonight. Do you still get nervous at all talking in front of people whatsoever?
A little bit.
Do you?
At the beginning.
Have just a moment where it kind of.
Yeah.
Because I have no fear of public speaking, but there is sort of a take in your environment thing before you kind of get into a rhythm and don't really notice it.
I catch myself doing a different show in front of people than I do right here, even though it's in front of people. I just don't think of it as being in front of people.
Well, no, we're talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
There's I will kind of strike myself doing that, going, I'm saying that in front of a lot of people. I just don't really even realize it. You're not seeing anyone, so it's just us in a room talking.
Yeah. There was some point yesterday, Laura said, how was your podcast? I'm like, I don't know. It's fine. And she goes, what'd you talk about? I have no idea. She said, what? I said, I don't know. I don't. But I guess we talked about baseball or something. She goes, you don't remember what you talked about? Not really. How do you not remember? I don't know. We talk a lot. I don't know. I don't know what I talked about.
I mean, yeah, let's put this to the test. Who was the guest last Tuesday?
Last Tuesday. Let me think. Who did Ole Miss play last week?
LSU.
LSU. But we never talked to an LSU person last week.
Uh-uh. I don't know the answer. I'd have to go back and look. That's what I'm saying. I don't remember who we had on the show last week.
I have no idea.
Without really thinking about it. I'm sure I could sit here long enough and figure it out.
It'd have to be some silence. I'd have to like really think.
You talked to Larry Holder or Glenn Gilbo or somebody about Saints or Pelicans.
I talked to Larry Holder about the Pels and all that. And we mentioned LSU baseball.
Okay.
There was a mention of it. And I don't know who else I talked to. I talked to...
It was South Carolina. It wasn't LSU. It was South Carolina, duh.
Oh, and we talked to...
We talked to Chris Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did that. See?
So it was 2 weeks ago that I
talked to Larry. I forgot who Ole Miss even played last weekend.
2 weeks ago, I talked to Gabe DeArmond about the NCAA
thing.
That's
right.
Did you see what Condoleezza Rice came out with some comments yesterday?
What'd she say?
Well, basically that players should be reimbursed for their name, likeness, and image.
Bless her.
That's what we've been trying to say, Condi. But she says that they can't say that while there's outstanding litigation.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, the NCAA is losing on this McNair thing, and they know it.
Podcast brought to you in part by Brandon White at Keys to Dream Travel. Completely free service specializing in Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations, taking the stress out of planning, taking care of all dining and fast pass reservations, transportation, anything else related to your vacation, an expert in getting you out of line and onto more rides, no matter the crowds. Mention the podcast and get a $25 Disney gift card. For booking and contact him for a free, no-obligation quote at brandon@keystodreamtravel.com or 901-634-8687 and ask about the free dining options depending on when you book your vacation.
Mississippi Flood Football Club tryouts will be Wednesday at 5:30 and then Sunday, May the 20th at 3 at beautiful FNC Park located in Oxford. Mississippi Flood Football is the Oxford-based club that has become North Mississippi's premier competitive soccer program. It's run by volunteers to provide a structured, competitive environment for your child, ranging from ages 8 to 19, both boys and girls. Mississippi Flood Football Club, where being competitive and development go hand in hand. Contact Chuck Trost at 662-801-3783 if you have any questions. Podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South Tailgating once. You'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South Tailgating will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one can match 7 South's customer service and attention to detail. It's 7SouthTailgating.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs, 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Now let's go to Jeffrey Wright to start our guest on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Good morning, Jeffrey. You can start here a little bit. You come from quite the college baseball, the baseball family. Casey Mize on Friday here in Oxford. And for me, especially because of my weirdness, but for most fans, it feels like a bit of an event. He's going to be 1-1 this summer, barring something crazy. And it's got David Price, Sonny Gray feel where you know you're watching somebody that's going to be up sooner than later. What's kind of some names have stuck out to you, you know, for you think, hey, this guy's certainly going to translate and it's something where it's probably worth the $12 ticket?
Ooh, That's interesting because pitcher, I think it has to be a pitcher, don't you?
Yeah, it does.
Like,
yes.
Like, you know, Alvarez.
Hitter plays 56 games.
Right. But, and on top of that, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Just, I've never, as someone who loves baseball, I've never felt like the need, like, I have to go watch this guy hit.
Yeah.
I do. I have always said, I got to see this guy pitch. And I don't know what it is about. I don't know if that says something about me or if that says something about baseball in general, but I'm trying to rack my brain. Because, like, even, like, I think, like, about, like, when Benintendi, like, when I saw him play, like, even though he was awesome, like, it still wasn't like, oh, this is must watch.
Now, he was underappreciated in college.
I'll tell you, underrated one. Who was that guy from Alabama that hit that home run into left field that got about 20 feet in the air?
Kent Mathis.
He would have been around, like, 2010, 2011.
Yeah, Kent Mathis.
Yeah, that guy was an underrated ticket guy. Because he was fun to just watch mash in BP. I mean, if you're talking about, like, guys that were coming in, I mean, it was always just like, I don't know, for me it was always just, okay, well, who's the number one, who's the number two at Arkansas, who's the number one, who's the number two at
Vanderbilt,
at Vandy. Usually Florida would always have one or two arms. Like, but none of the guys, like, I can't remember the last guy that I thought, oh, he won't be in minor league baseball very long.
Yeah, I mean, this is in that Price, Luke Hochaver kind of mold. Maybe is another guy from
David Price is the name that comes to mind for me.
Yeah,
and then lived in a lot of double A towns like Birmingham and Mobile,
sure.
You know, you can remember when, you know, a Chris Sale or a
that's a good one,
or a at the time Mark Pryor, guys like that. I can remember when Kerry
Vanderbilt, by the way,
huh.
Mark Pryor started at Vanderbilt.
Yeah. I can remember when Kerry Wood, for example, had a start in Birmingham on a Saturday night, and it was rainy. And there were still a lot of people that showed up because they'd heard about this kid from Texas who threw 100 miles an hour. So there was that kind of thing, but it's rare.
A lot of other teams would probably put Pomeranz in that list. You've known him since he was knee-high. Did you ever really even appreciate what he did because you know him?
Yes. No, oh, totally. That was, I mean, honestly, the name that came to mind, I was thinking was like Pomeranz, but it's like,
you see,
I mean, obviously, yeah, I thought you were talking about like someone coming in to throw.
Yeah.
Who was the one? Missouri had the one kid.
Gibson and Aaron Crow.
Aaron Crow was the last one I remember thinking like, okay, this guy's going to be money. Just because, but I mean, the thing about Mize is it just me here? I'm not skeptical of his talent because A, I've watched a radar gun and I've seen that whatever that splitter, whatever that thing is, it's an out pitch. Like we always used to joke about whether or not someone has an out pitch. Mize has an out pitch.
He's got two because he's got a 90 mile an hour cutter also.
There's like this slight air of me that doesn't believe it because he pitches at Auburn.
you would believe in Casey Mize more if he wore black and gold?
Yeah, like if he were in, like if his orange and blue were just gator blue, I'm like, dude, this guy's can't miss. But and like it is like funny to think that like Auburn in the 90s had a really great program, and now it's the point where they had a guy. Let's see, I think at one point my youngest brother and I were looking at Mize's numbers. He had thrown something like 34 innings. It was like 34 innings. He had darn near 40 strikeouts, and he'd given up like one run.
He has 119 strikeouts to 7 walks this season.
Yeah, is that good?
It's not bad, considering you throw in the mid-90s, you've got a 90-mile-an-hour cutter, and then he's got, as you mentioned, that split-finger thing that
now,
he throws.
Here is the one thing that I don't know if college baseball fans truly – like when they see like a guy like this and – you just make the assumption that he's going to be an awesome pro. Like, as I've started betting more heavily on Major League Baseball, you start really realizing how unfair Major League hitting is. Like, if you start missing, like, it was the problem that Drew struggled with for a while. It was, hey, man, 92, and if you're not spotting it up exactly where you want it, they turn it around. And the same thing with like 95. Like you look at like, you know, these guys are just, their hands are just so good. So, like, one thing I guess I'll start paying attention to more, like, it's one thing to just throw it in the strike zone, and I understand everyone goes, what are you talking about? He's getting spotted up. He only has 7 walks. It's like, well, there's a difference between throwing strikes in college. Like, if you just throw it hard and it has movement and you're getting it over the plate, like, you'll get people out in college. That's not necessarily the case at the major league level. And I think that's why when some of these guys struggle, that I think that's kind of the underappreciated aspect about major league pitching is just how good they are at spotting everything.
Oh, control and command are two completely different things.
Yes.
It's not even close. I mean, you know, I mean, staying on an Ole Miss angle, Will Stokes throws the ball across the plate, but when he misses, it gets killed. He has control, but not command a lot of the times. So, you know.
The other thing, I don't know how I got on this rabbit hole last night. I started looking at guys and the amount of innings that they had thrown, and this was on the major leagues. Like, I totally forgot in 2008, CC Sabathia threw 253 innings.
253.
He threw 253 in 08. Then, like, I looked at Price. Price had a year where I think he threw, like, 248 innings. Then there was, like, a 241, a 243. Like, does the average fan appreciate how many innings that is?
No.
No, absolutely not. Because they do all that deal about, well, back in the day, it's like Price has numbness in his – that can't be a good thing. And they're like, well, maybe he's playing too much Fortnite because apparently the Red Sox have a Fortnite obsession inside their clubhouse.
No, I thought it was maybe he's tweeting too much.
But you have numbness in your hand. It's quite possible that you're starting to break down. It's why I'm fascinated to see what the Dodgers do this offseason with Clayton Kershaw. I mean, the best pitcher of our generation.
Regular season.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. You can't get to the playoffs without a regular season.
No, I'm just making the...
Yeah, I mean, the best pitcher of our generation probably... And he's still in his 30s, in his early 30s, but there's some signs. And he's going to want, and I don't blame him, he's going to want to get full cash value for his history. And I'm fascinated to see what happens.
So now that our boy is back in Mississippi, and of course he, our boy Dylan, lives at the altar of Clayton Kershaw. Chase, I was trying to explain to him last night how much confusion do you think he would have had with Curt Schilling? Because Dylan is the ultimate. He doesn't think baseball's any, like, an inning in March or an inning in April is the same thing as an inning in October. Like, yeah. He believes that.
He does.
And Curt Schilling is the guy that you don't want to say average numbers during the regular season, but, like, he was not an elite regular season starter. And I was just thinking about how much confusion he would have had with Curt Schilling in the playoffs.
Well,
because even like Madison Bumgarner, who's obviously, he amps it up a degree. Like, Bumgarner's still really good in the regular season.
I think Dylan had disowned me yesterday by that point because he was texting me by 10 a.m., 10:30 about our you shouldn't re-sign Clayton Kershaw take, and then the fact that we said Greg Little might be more steady than Laremy Tunsil. I'm pretty sure that Dylan no longer considered me a sibling for a few hours there yesterday.
Ooh, those are two saucy takes. Hang on, I am here to hear the explanation on each of them.
Neil,
okay, go ahead. So Neil's on Kershaw. I think he laid out the case clearly. The arm issues.
Actually,
the
Neil gave the little Tunsil take,
but that's the take I got to listen to.
Go ahead, Neil.
Is his feet are not as good?
No, Greg's? No.
Yes.
No, I don't think Greg has the flair and the flash of Laremy. I think Greg has a chance to be a steadier NFL player.
Okay, I asked this question. Will he play left tackle? Because I could see that at right tackle, but I think at left tackle, dude, you gotta have the flair, the flash. I think you gotta have the monster like Tunsil that's feet move at a million miles a minute.
You do, but you got to have a little more than that. Great left tackles have the complete package. And I don't know that Laremy has displayed that at the NFL level yet.
Are you out on Laremy?
No, I'm not out. No, I'm not out. But I'm not as in as you guys are as being an NFL superstar. I hate doing this because I'm going to get killed, and I'm the only one that ever gets killed when the hot take that's remotely negative. I'm not sure that – I'll put it this way. I'm not sure that the Dolphins believe he is as convicted to be a great left tackle as they want him to be.
In fairness to Neil's take, I think Dylan has the same concern. Dylan, we were discussing this a couple weeks ago. Somehow we got into speaking of hot, saucy takes, I'll take some pressure off you, Neil. I'm actually out on the NFL draft, and here's why. It's like giving a drug addict who's in recovery, it's like literally just giving him a weekend of just like a bender. Like just all the drugs you want, everything's right in front of you. And but by the way, Monday, you have to be right back into rehab. Like I'm in serious withdrawals right now.
From the draft?
Yes, because the draft is the worst. It's the worst. All you're doing is it's all like you're fired up because it's a draft, and drafts in general are just fun. Like it's why fantasy baseball drafts with your buddies, like drafts just in general are fun. But then they throw all those highlights up there, and then there's some back and forth banter, and then you get to call people idiots. Like it's the best of football. And then it's completely taken away from you after that Monday. And then on top of that, we still got like 5.5 months till football starts. And now we're getting into, we've gotten over the excitement. Like opening day, like early baseball's awesome. Like you can't take away opening day. Like I just think it's like it's that time of the year for baseball is always just so much fun. Then you have like the end of the basketball. You have the Masters. You have WrestleMania. You have all of the big, of course, sporting events of our generation and of our time. And then you have the draft, and then after it, it's like reality setting in. Okay, yet again, here we go. The Warriors are going to win another NBA championship. Baseball, we're getting into really the dog days. And then on top of that, like, we don't have a whole lot. And so now I'm just having the worst amount of football withdrawals you could possibly have, and it's killing me.
Yeah, you know, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, the All-Star Game, SummerSlam, all the favorites.
Right. All the seminal sporting moments of it's mainly U.S. Open, U.S. Open, PGA Championship, SummerSlam. I actually SummerSlam, U.S. Open, PGA Championship.
Okay.
These are dog days, man, because baseball gets to this place where this is the time of the year that you remember, oh, man, this is a long season.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's when you realize, like, dude, we have what? We still have, like, 115 games?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's like, hey, we're 40 games in. Yeah, there's 120 left. There's 120 games left. There's a lot of time. It's like Carson freaks out, and he's like the standings. He goes, Dad, they're 2.5 back. And I'm like, yeah, there's 120 games, they could win it by 10 or lose it by 10. It's too early.
When they were promoting Red Sox-Yankees as the battle for first place, I found myself and goes, does anyone else notice that it's May 7th?
Hey, you push what you got. By the way, is this on our boy Mickey last night? Mets bat out of order and lost to Reds? How often does that happen in Major League Baseball?
I can't remember the last time it happened.
I mean, at the end of the day, it has to be on him, right?
Well, I mean, it's on him because he's the manager, but like logistically, but also, like, is that on him? Who is it?
Well, I guess
it's on a bench coach.
I guess you make the argument it's the bench coach.
Yeah.
Right?
What happened was, I think they turned in a lineup and then they changed the lineup and never updated the lineup that got turned in.
Yeah, it says Callaway says his intended lineup was the one presented to the umpires. The other one inputted into a computer was wrong. He did not say how the mistake was made.
Okay, so this would be my question. Did they bat out of order because the lineup that was like on the scoreboard is what the Mets were going by, like the players were going by, and that's how they batted out of order? Or are they saying that
publicly.
I thought the lineup that's given to the home plate umpire, I thought that's the official lineup of the game.
Yeah, it says in the lineup posted publicly and on the wall in the Mets dugout, Flores was batting second with Cabrera batting third. But in the handwritten lineup card presented to umpires, Cabrera was batting second, followed by Flores. So that's what it was the dugout card was different than the one presented to the umpire.
Okay.
So they went by the one on the wall, and then the Reds went, hey, that's not the one you gave us a minute ago.
The good news for the Mets is at the end of the season, one game's not going to matter.
I mean, that's the problem. You got to say it's on him, right? I mean, at the end of the day, like.
I mean, it's on him, but there are three teams in that division that are so significantly better than them that at the end of the season, no one's going to look back and go, you know, that day in Cincinnati cost us the pennant.
Nah. Speaking of Cincinnati, Matt Harvey, wow, what a ride.
Said, by the way, the last time it happened to the Mets was, or in a Mets game, was also against the Reds. It happened to the Reds against the Mets May 11th, 2008.
That's so more recent than I thought it would be. I thought it was interesting that the Mets tried to demote Matt Harvey to the minor leagues. He right. said no, so they demoted him to the minor leagues.
Well, and then, so I thought that was just a move so they could technically cut him.
The minor league thing?
Yes.
Oh, I think league thing was going to be.
Did he or did he not sign with Cincinnati?
He's been traded to Cincinnati.
Okay, so he's been traded.
They have his rights.
Okay. So, wow. I mean, that is just an unbelievable rise and fall.
It's why, man, I'm terrified. I don't, like, to your point, like a guy like Mize, and when you take that guy 1-1 and you give him all the money and all that stuff, and he's already had a history of some arm issues. We've gone back and forth on Mize forever on this show. I'm so scared of pitchers, I don't know what to do. Give me the great college hitter all day long.
Yes. And then give me the high school arm all day long.
Give me the high school arms. Let me take the high school arms around the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. And early, let me get those college hitters. Elite college hitters.
Last thing on the other topic real quick. The last time it happened, period, in baseball was July 4, 2016 when the Brewers did it against the Nationals. So, more common than we think.
Wow.
Right, but like the Brewers doing it makes sense. Although, dude, the Brewers are good.
No, they're good. Again, they're legit.
Up is down. Like, I hate baseball right now.
Pittsburgh,
I hate baseball.
Pittsburgh's legit.
I know. And they were sellers last deadline.
They traded Garrett Cole.
Unbelievable. Okay, so this hypothetical got posed to me yesterday. And so because of my answer, I took a little bit of heat. And so I want to hear y'all's opinion because I'm a fanboy. And as we know, that's pretty much exactly what I am. Okay, of these four coaches, who do you think thus far has done the best job of the four new coaches that I'm about to name?
Okay.
Matt Luke, Joe Moorhead, Jeremy Pruitt, and our boy at Arkansas.
Chad Morris.
Of those four, who do you think, rank them 1 to 4 from best job to worst job?
From the day they were officially hired, not factoring in Matt's interim season.
Correct.
Well, Matt and Moorhead are the two that have not made egregious errors.
Yeah.
So they're 1-2, whatever order you're putting them in.
That's what I said, and I thought Matt's done a better job given for recruiting and everything of all the circumstances of, in my opinion, trying to fill holes in a roster to, I think, being very judicious.
He managed the chaos when it could have unraveled.
Exactly. I think I said I thought he has done the best job.
Yeah.
And then I said Moorhead was 2.
I'm putting Morris 3 because he's a wet blanket, but he didn't call out his own fans in a spring game. So Pruitt's 4th.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing Morris has done is dropped in from a helicopter or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. That's just him being a circus. But yes. he hasn't committed the – if you ask me whose stock do I want to purchase, Morris's or Pruitt's, give me Morris stock all day long. If those are my two choices, just give me Morris.
Yeah, I mean, but okay. So then Jeff posed the question this way: it's like, okay, if the Memphis job were open and the athletic department came and recommended, and they said we want you to make this hire, and all four guys were available and wanted the job, who would I recommend? And I said Matt.
At Memphis?
Yes, because I think Matt is. I think Matt is a decent blend of Cut and of Tuberville. And what I mean by that is I think Tuberville is one of the best talent identifiers I've ever seen. And I thought Cut was a pretty good, stable, like program manager. You know what I mean?
I have no problem with that if we're building a roster for complete scratch. If he's just coming in and replacing Norvell, I'd go Chad Morris.
I would too.
Correct. I was saying, like, I had like the whole, okay, you've got to start over.
You got to build a program from scratch,
yes,
with one of those
with
four
no
guys.
Players.
Well, I certainly wouldn't pick Pruitt. He would be dead last.
Yes.
I would either pick Luke or Moorhead.
Yeah, and that to me, like, that was, like, I think Moorhead's a really good football coach, and I think in general those guys tend to work out.
If you talk to football people, what they tell you about Moorhead, and if you're listening in the Golden Triangle, let me know you are. Get this in full context. All Moorhead has to do is not wreck the ship at Mississippi State, and he's next in line at Penn State if Franklin gets an itch. And most people think Franklin will get an itch.
NFL itch?
Yeah, NFL are one of the big, flashy, splashy programs.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, that seems to be his MO.
He's damn good. I mean, look, I wouldn't want my kids around his program, but he's a damn good football coach. There's no way around that.
I completely agree with you. It's almost angering how good of a football coach he is.
Well, what you got on your show?
All right, so today Memphis had another commitment yesterday, so I went and found the kid's high school coach, so that's where we are on that. That'll be at 9:25. Mark Giannato, who covers the Tigers for the Commercial Appeal, will be in the second hour. So I don't know if you know this, but Penny Hardaway has gotten the job at Memphis. Basketball job.
I heard that.
I'm not okay. And it turns out it's a talking point.
You asked me what Memphis should do if they just fire if what's his face moves on Norvell. Just hire Penny.
Do you have any reason to believe he can't do it?
It would be great for talk radio, so I'm all for that. Just hire Penny.
Rory's two under.
And Jordan's two or three over.
Yeah, I know.
Jordan three putted 10 and then hit the ball in the water on 11.
Not only that.
If Rory thought Jordan normally played slow, he's really getting slow today.
Well, and then on top of that, after his last bogey, Jordan, like, once the hole was over, Jordan was talking to Rory, and you've never seen a human being more checked out when another person was talking than what Rory was to whatever Jordan was saying. Like, Jordan was clearly, like, explaining something. Like, he was very animated, using his hands and everything, and Rory could not have cared less.
It's right in your alley. Well, enjoyed it, bud. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks to Jeffrey for giving us time, as always, on Thursday mornings. The podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. Sign an annual contract now. Let them take care of your lawn and landscape needs all year long. They also give you free pressure washing of your driveway and sidewalks, or $50 off if that pressure washing job is more than 2,000 square feet. They will hook you up there. They'll take care of landscaping, pine straw, shrubs, trees, structures, and more. Give them a call, 662-607-7773.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals as well. Check them out, GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site, HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you're looking for, then send him an email. It's ha@HarryAlexander.com. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss and Auburn, starting the night at Swayze, 6 o'clock. Tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Sedo County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast, a leader in condo financing, and the float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. We will now continue our talk. We'll stay on college baseball for a little bit, some Auburn football talk, and more with AuburnSports.com's Brian Matthews. Brian, welcome to the show this morning. We've talked a good bit of Auburn and Ole Miss baseball this week. My is going on Friday. Were you a little shocked, or did you kind of expect Butch to keep him on normal rest?
I was a little surprised because early in the season when Auburn had a Thursday-Saturday series, he moved last to Thursday. But going down the stretch, Auburn's got two in a row. And Bush has elected to keep Mize and Tanner Burns in the Friday-Saturday slot. And they're moving Davis Daniel over to Thursday. And Davis has not started in nearly a month. His last start was April 14th. Had some struggles as a starter, but has been using relief the last three outings. And seems to have found himself a little bit. And this will be his opportunity to see if he can bounce back and have one of the better outings of his career.
What should Ole Miss fans kind of expect from Davis tonight?
That's a good question because, you know, Davis has had some really good outings in his two-year career. And usually his best performances have been on the road, including two big wins last season. But this season has been a little bit more up and down for him. He did throw a good five innings at Kentucky earlier in the season, but they still lost that game. But, you know, his MO has been more of his inconsistencies. You know, he sometimes gets his pitch counts pretty high, has a hard time. Sometimes, you know, finishing off batters, he'll get 1-2 or 0-2 on hitters and then really struggle to get that final out. So those are some things he's been working on. And he did throw with a little bit more accuracy and a little bit more punch in his fastball. He's up to 96 last Sunday when he just threw an inning and a relief. And I'm not sure if he can maintain that for an entire start. But I think those were some good signs for him. But when he's on, you'll see him working much faster, getting strikeouts and not getting these high pitch counts. When he's off, he's struggling. You'll see him throw 20 or 30 pitches just to get out of an inning, and you'll know that he's not going to be there for long.
This roster had Mize. We knew they were going to be better, but what's allowed them to take this type of jump? And we're talking national seed conversation, certainly in good position to host with 2 weeks to go, barring some kind of meltdown. So what's been the key other than Mize and maybe the emergence of Tanner Burns that's allowed this to happen?
Well, I think it's Auburn's recruiting class that Butch brought in. Really, even though it's his third year here, because he was hired late in the process, this is really his first full recruiting class. And they've got a number of guys from that class that are, you know, having big seasons for Auburn. I mean, really, if you take the top four hitters in Auburn's lineup, 41 of Auburn's 55 home runs all come from newcomers. You know, Edouard Julien leads the team with 13. He's a freshman. Stephen Williams has, I think, 8 or 9. He's a freshman. Brendan Venter has 11. He's a junior college transfer. And Brett Wright has 8 or 9. He's a junior college transfer playing catcher for Auburn. So that class has come in and really put a stamp on this team and really been really important for the way this team is sort of ascending right now and the way they're playing right now. They're you know, they started the SEC 4-8, but they've won 9 of the last 12 games. And, you know, they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now.
This is going to be a relative question, obviously, because it's not like he's been knocked around even once. But what goes wrong for Mize when he's just average? What's the one thing he's got to kind of be careful with?
Sometimes he'll get the ball up, and you know, he'll hang a slider or the fastball will be, you know, a little bit up and over the plate. And you know, there's some good SEC hitters. When you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay for it. And if you barrel up one of his fastballs, it's probably going to go a long way. And that's happened a few times this season. The one thing I will say about Mize that impresses me the most about him is his makeup. You know, when he does give up, you know, a couple runs or a big home run or something, he is not one that usually is just going to lose it and then start walking people or, you know, give up hit after hit after hit. He can usually, you know, hold his composure and continue to pitch the way he has all season. So if you get to him or if you get an opportunity, and you get that mistake pitch, you know, a team like Ole Miss needs to take advantage of when they get that opportunity.
What's he like when you cover him? I mean, is he a different guy on game day than he is on other days? What's his personality?
Pretty laid back personality. When you talk to him, you know, he's usually talking about the team. I've been pretty impressed the way he's handled the attention because, you know, he's being talked about pretty seriously about being the number one overall pick by the Detroit Tigers. And Detroit's been down here just about every game, and so have a bunch of other scouts. And, you know, he's got a ton of attention, but it hasn't seemed to affect him one bit. And he's made some really good adjustments in the offseason, too. He's changed the way he throws his slider. He's added the fourth pitch to his repertoire, and it's all worked out perfectly. He's been healthy all season. He's had the best season of his career, and it just sounds like, you know, in another few weeks or month from now, he's going to be number one overall in that draft, which is, you know, just incredible to think about.
See, this is where I'm not wired like a lot of these elite athletes. I'm not an elite athlete. I once was, but then I cut myself. And,
yeah.
And
weren't we all?
Yeah, but if I'm a guy, and this isn't a knock on Casey Mize at all, but if I'm a guy like Casey Mize who's had some health issues before, and here I am about to go number one in the draft, I don't want the ball right now. I want to get wrapped in bubble wrap and so I can get my $8 million. I mean, do you sense at all watching him that he realizes each day off the calendar right now is a day closer to a generational payday?
You know, I don't. I really don't. He hasn't showed that yet. Not at all. I mean, I'm sure he knows it. I'm sure his family and his agent know it very well. But he hasn't let that affect him one bit. And he's been the same Casey Mize this season as he was the last two seasons to me. And I really think what he's done with his delivery and his pitches has just taken a lot of stress off his arm. You know, he had that sore forearm last year. I think that came from his slider. And he just has changed the way he throws it. It slowed down a little bit, too. But the way he throws it now, it just doesn't stress his elbow and his forearm like it was last season. I think it makes him feel more comfortable that he can, you know, continue throwing for as much as he needs to.
Yeah, it's because you're right. Because whenever you hear the word forearm with pitchers, you go, oh, well, the elbow is right around the corner. Here comes Tommy John surgery. There goes the money. And he's not had that issue all year. Good for him. I don't know him, but he seems like a good guy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, a year ago, there probably were a lot of clubs that thought, I don't know, this kid's got electric stuff, but that forearm thing, maybe he's a late first-round pick, and now it's just this consensus he's going number one overall if he can just get through, three, four more starts without without an issue.
Two more series, the SEC tournament, and then, you know, I think the draft is during the regionals, or maybe super regionals, but yeah, just a few more weeks and he's ready to go.
True. Yeah, it's even before the College World Series. We're literally talking about a couple starts.
Oh yeah. Now you can't get the money until until it's over. But I don't know. Those cats are wired differently than I am.
But here's the best stat from Casey so far this season. This continues to blow my mind. 119 strikeouts, 7 walks.
Yeah.
That to me is just incredible. I mean, that's just, I think it's like a 14-1 or something like that, strikeout to walk ratio. That's just unbelievable. And he had a similar type numbers last year.
So it's still 4 months away, but we talk about football every day. Real quick, just your general expectations for this Auburn team. I know I've talked to Jay about it some on our podcast, but just kind of your general expectations for this team going forward. There seems to be at least some question mark about, you know, whether they have an impact running back on that roster, which has never really been an issue at Auburn. They always seem to have one or four of those. I guess as you get ready for the season, get ready for the preseason and all that, how do you sort of see this team?
I see this team as good, you know, maybe great. I think they've got to, you know, show some things. They've got to shore up some areas that I'm not sure about. Running back's one of them. And I agree with you. I think everybody assumes Auburn's going to have two or three good running backs, and maybe they will. And I don't think anybody saw Cameron Petway or, you know, some of the guys that have stepped up for the last few years, stepping up like they did, you know, in previous seasons. But, you know, when I look at the running backs, I see a guy, Cam Martin, who's, you know, about 190 pounds, 5'9", you know, not really built to be an every down back. I see, you know, maybe the two most talented guys are freshmen. You know, I'm not sure they're ready to be, you know, feature backs in the SEC yet. Maybe they will be. And then, you know, they've got some, guys that need to step up on the offensive line. They're going to get a grad transfer in here from UMass. He's probably going to end up being the starting right tackle. And, of course, Prince Tega played seven games or started seven games at left tackle last season, but he wasn't that good. But he's a guy with a ton of potential. So you wonder about the two tackle positions in the center position, also looking for a new starter there. Defensively, I think this team is going to be probably better than last year. I really think so. Defensive line is as good as I've seen since maybe the 80s under Pat Dye. And, you know, the only weakness I see in the defense is maybe depth in the secondary. I'm talking about just backups. But I think the front 11 plus the next four or five are really, really good overall defensively. And then, you know, back to offense, besides running back and offensive line, you know, they had some key injuries at receivers. Two guys suffered ACL injuries in spring. You know, two guys, maybe the top five or six guys in the playing rotation. So that sets them back a little bit. But, you know, you look at the receiver position, they returned everybody from last year anyway. So they do have a lot of guys still coming back at that position. Of course, you know, you got Jarrett Stidham, who I think is going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the country next season. You know, if he stays healthy and Auburn can protect him. So I think there's potential for Auburn to be really, really good. But, you know, there's also potential for them being a three or four loss team, as to be quite honest, most of Gus Malzahn's teams have been since he took over the program back in 2013.
Did the two losses at the end of the season negate in the minds of Auburn people the two wins at the end of the regular season that were so spectacular?
Unfortunately, yes, I would say so in a lot of people's minds, yes. It's really disappointing when you look at it, because those two wins in November were incredible. I mean, back-to-back wins over number one teams in the country. You're right there. If you're Auburn, you're right there. You're going to be in the college football playoff, and, you know, maybe you're the best team in the country at the time. And then, you know, Kerryon Johnson gets banged up. Auburn's really beat up going to that Southeast Conference championship game, and then Georgia just put it on them. And that was that. And I don't think, you know, I look at bowl games like, you know, you get a matchup like a UCF versus Auburn. Those games a lot of times go the UCF's way. You know what I'm saying? UCF's the more motivated team. I think that makes a lot of difference during bowl season. But I think that loss to Georgia in the championship game was really a downer for Auburn fans.
Well, Brian, really appreciate the time so much, and we'll be seeing you soon down the road.
Yeah, sounds great, guys. Appreciate it.
Jeffrey Wright, Brian Matthews, and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Let Billy's Pecans handle your corporate gifting. I know a lot of you have. We appreciate it. They do too. It's great product, fantastic service. They know the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for your staff, tokens of goodwill for referrals, whatever. They can handle it at Billy's Pecans, whether it's 5,000 orders or anything in between. They'll handle it with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern styles and with items at every price point. You simply can't choose wrong. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, ship fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans. It couldn't be any more satisfying. Billy'sPecans.com, 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they'll get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today.
Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website. They have a great app as well. And they're in Holly Springs. You can give them a call at 662-252-2321. They deliver wherever you are, so you can use them for your pharmaceutical needs. And they're also now in Oxford as well with G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. They will deliver local, same great hometown service. Thanks to Jeffrey and Brian for joining us today. We'll tape tomorrow from a remote setup, as Neil will still be coming back from Jackson in the morning from his engagement with JG Tate tonight. What time is Jay headed over? What's his plan today?
I don't know. I know that he's planning to be there by 5.
Well, that would be a positive. That
I
would
think
help.
He'll be there before that, because I think
Jay, what's the setup? Is he bringing stuff? Are you taking stuff? Do they have stuff? Or
he's
what?
He's
what
bringing
doing?
His stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and they have some stuff too.
Do they?
Yeah.
There's always a little worry when we do this. You know, it's like, okay, who's got what? What are we doing?
For
who's
sure.
doing the audio? Because, you know, kind of what's the...
Those things can go haywire.
Were you doing it out front, like by the bar area or what?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay.
I think so.
Just from the middle of the bourbon barrels?
That would be good.
All around you?
Might do one in a bourbon barrel. Just get in there and just drink as I go.
You could. Good.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the guy that like takes the muscle relaxer and then drinks and then sees what happens.
Cause you're back.
It's killing me.
You haven't had a lot of ailments recently, and then
no, I don't know what I did. I did something to the right side of my back.
It's really the Peloton's fault. You really should get rid of it. It's not working. It's not a good idea.
It's probably they might know. It's not true.
You're a month in, 2 months in. You're already.
It's a workout. It's a different deal. And my problem is I'm too damn competitive on it.
Yeah, the
desire to finish like
the
fifth,
ranking mechanism for that is a good and terrible thing for you.
It makes me work out harder, but it
you forget that you're 48 years old or whatever you are
yeah,
at the same time.
Yeah.
The dude on there that's next to you that's 27 can maintain that a little better than you can at that point.
And it's kind of fun because it's not, I don't use my name. I have an anonymous name. And
what is your
just,
name?
Well, if I told you that, it wouldn't be anonymous anymore.
For all the Peloton people that might end up in your race or group or whatever?
We have some Peloton people because sometimes I'll see someone that's from Oxford.
Do you reckon? Oh, so it has town names.
Uh-huh.
So your town name would be Oxford, obviously.
It is, although I'm thinking about changing it to parts unknown.
Can you do that?
I don't know. I got to find out. Remember in wrestling?
Dubuque, Iowa.
Dubuque, Iowa. Great idea.
Yeah.
I got contacted. In fact, this would be a great way to kind of finish the podcast. Hold on.
He doesn't have his readers on today, so he's having a hard time navigating his mobile.
There's a marathon in Iowa in June. One of our listeners texted me about it yesterday. He got my number from Chris Brooks, which was fine. It's called runfortroops.com, run and the number 4 troops.com. It's going to start in Dyersville, Iowa. It's near the Field of Dreams field.
Okay.
It is going to finish in Dubuque.
It finishes in Dubuque.
It's mostly shaded, flat, crushed limestone. It's a great cause. runfortroops.com.
Can you run a marathon in June?
No. And I have... Carson and I are taking our boys' trip that weekend anyway. And no, I could not run a marathon right now.
Okay.
No.
Do they have a half?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Could you run a half?
I could think about a half.
You could run a half.
I could run a half. Wouldn't be fun, but I could do it. No. I'm going to be at Cubs game that day.
Okay.
Seeing the Cubs that day.
Who do they play?
Reds. We're going to Cincinnati.
Oh. There'll be more Cubs fans than Red fans in that place.
Oh, yeah, it'll be blue.
Like, whoa. So, anyway.
It's pretty much that way anywhere. Cub fans are sort of like Red Sox fans.
Yeah. Bandwagon is all hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the correct term for that you're looking for there.
There's a lot of that. I can genuinely say that I'm not bandwagon, so I don't really give a about whatever.
They frustrate you, don't they?
The
bandwagon fan?
Yeah. I catch myself disliking.
I've been a Cubs fan all my life. Man, what's the player you remember the most?
Chris Bryant?
Starlin Castro. when he was there?
Yeah, they don't even remember back when Starlin first came up. They like Starlin because he was the second baseman in 2015. I'm like, that doesn't count.
They'd have a hard time with even like Aramis Ramirez or like that, like names along those.
Oh, yeah. When Aramis Ramirez was the best player on the team for years.
Carlos Zambrano, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I don't. Those fans, the ones that are just, they've been fans since Chris Bryant started smiling in a Cubs uniform, that they don't count.
Congratulations to Drew and Corey and them as women's golf team moving on to the national championships. Probably we'll talk to them for our golf podcast next week as they've completely rebuilt the program. Success story from those regards, making the nationals for the first time in program history. They finished in the top five yesterday out in San Francisco. I'm assuming they came home last night or coming home this morning. And Julia Johnson, a freshman, finished one shot off the individual lead as well. She fired a 67 yesterday to wrap it up for Ole Miss. So they move on to the national championships. I think they are also – I think the men's and women's championships are in the same place maybe. I think they're at Carson Creek in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma State's probably the best men's team in the country, and they get to play on their home course. So that seems unfair and should definitely be the betting favorite when the time comes. But Ole Miss women do advance out of regional play. The men are up next in regional play. They are in Bryan, Texas, College Station, basically, for their regional as well. I think there are six men's regionals, and you got to finish top five to advance to the national championships is the way I understand that, the best. So, anyway, congrats to them. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. Not sure what's going to be on it yet, but we'll entertain you as always, and we'll talk to you then.